Welcome back, everybody, to the Dom and Colin podcast, the Challenge 38 Ride or Dies, Episode 3 in the books, and we are here to talk about it all. Of course, I am one of your hosts, Matt Ligori, alongside my co-host, Brian Scally. Scally, how are you?
Hello, hello. I am good. I'm excited to be back here talking about the episode of the Challenge 38 that I actually kind of liked a lot. Maybe that's just relative. I don't know, but I thought this was a pretty good episode.
So I was thinking about you during, not during the episode. It was kind of more so brought to my attention, I guess, after the episode, that this is probably an episode that you in particular would have liked, because you were just talking last week about how the vets are coming in. It's going to be the vet show. And this episode was pretty much the rookie show, besides the fact that, like, the rookies were not the ones in power. So, like, I'm sure you would have preferred that given the stance that you had kind of been coming in with. But there was a lot of rookie action here.
Yeah, there was. I don't know if it's just that, like, I enjoy getting to know the new rookies. For me, it's like, well, we got a pretty even, we got to know a lot of new people. It wasn't just focused on one story. I feel like a lot of the storylines were interesting. A lot of genuine, like, moments with cast members. So I thought that I enjoyed this episode. It didn't feel as preachy. Like, the vets didn't get as many moments to just be like these stupid rookies, like, we have to show them how to do it. Even though, like, a vet won, it wasn't the most vets of vets. So at least there was some intrigue.
You famously did say, give me all the Annalise content and none of the bananas and Nisa Jordan. Like, all. So you got exactly what you wanted.
Again, I don't know that I said that, but roll it is tapes. What we got.
Okay. Well, there was a lot. I mean, from the jump, I mean, they always really set us up at the beginning of the episode with who the episode's going to be focused around. Like, the first couple of confessionals are your main players in the episode, whether they're going home or they're just involved in a big thing. So when we got, you know, Tommy and Annalise out of the gate, I was like, oh, this is probably their boot episode. But it ended up just being, you know, more so of a big decision that they were going to make. We'll talk about that throughout this podcast here. And obviously, Anissa and Jordan coming into the house is more so a big story because of the Jordan of it all and Tori. So Anissa coming in, you know, in this episode rather than in the last episode really just signified, you know, there's not much to talk about with her here. She's just kind of there, and we'll get to her when we get to her. She's, you know, playing the bridge between her best friend and her ex-fiance, and you know, we'll get to all that. But so I don't know. Where do we start here with the two of them being brought in or anywhere else?
Yeah. I think let's do that. We can talk about the two of them being brought in and especially like how it was done. Obviously, we got left on the cliffhanger of just Jordan entering and then like, oh, someone else is also here. And like Anissa made that entrance her own. And I thought, like, you know, did it well, the hood up and like made her moment. But I thought it was interesting how she was very much an afterthought. I'm wondering if that's specifically because they know that the ties between these two are a little shaky to justify, or if it's just like Jordan is the name and he's the threatening one, and then like, all right, also Anissa's here.
Also, possibly, like, you know, part of this maybe had to do with the fact that Anissa had already been there, and they, you know, I don't know what the reaction would have been, like, because I don't presume anybody up there, like, maybe they thought Anissa and James could come back in the way that Casey and Kenny did, but it's probably a bigger surprise for them to see Anissa coming back without James, you know, not knowing that she's going to be paired up with Jordan. So they probably did get more of a shocked reaction seeing Anissa walk in, seeing Anissa without James, and not having it be like, oh, Anissa, like, you know, it would be more confusion, I think, if they brought them in together. Like, the more I think about it, rather than just like shock and surprise to see them individually. So I don't know. I guess I get it. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense too, except for the fact that they also left us on a cliffhanger with the two vets coming in this week, made sure to have their hoods up as well, shielding us from who they are. So I wonder how much it is like, all right, you got to leave them on the impact of like Bananas and Nani, because that is like a very impactful team. Mm-hmm. And like the audience is definitely going to know who they are. And it's like, wow, they're here. And then Jordan, of course. And then it's like Anissa, Darrell, and Veronica. As much as like I like, I guess, like all of them, love some of them, I think that the audience is not going to have as big of a reaction, because if the cast was unspoiled, sure, then like us longtime fans would be like, oh my God, I can't believe they're here. Mm-hmm. But for the newer fans, especially, I feel like it's going to be like, who are these people? I don't watch All Stars.
Right. I thought it was Dee and Rogan coming in. I was surprised to hear you say that you think this is going to be Darrell and Veronica. God.
All right, so you brought up Dee and Rogan in the year 2022. Sure.
I'm just thinking in terms of, like, you know, all of these people who were, like, you know, released from the show at once, Jordan, you know, being a part of that bunch, and now he's back. So I thought he was just bringing back his winning team. And then CT is going to come in with, you know, Kara, who's back, and we're just going to bring back everybody that MTV has put off to the side.
If Rogan came back, I would not be surprised.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that is yeah, that's the deal. The two of them are back, and we, like you mentioned, we see that there's two more coming along the way next week. It would be a very fun surprise, kind of what you're saying. It would have been a very fun surprise for us as an audience if we were just sitting there, like, I mean, there's no way that that's like a realistic possibility. I feel like even if they hadn't announced Darrell and Veronica as part of the cast, I feel like, you know, there's no way that we would not have known that by now. You know, like, who are these two coming in? There's no world where next, you know, we're sitting here speculating who's it going to be and then find out next week. But that would be a lot of fun if that were the case. If that were ever a realistic possibility, I would have loved that reveal to see Veronica's back.
Yeah, imagine how hard you would have to try to not find out that they were even on the cast.
You would have to just delete your phone. Throw it out.
Yeah, so I don't think that's possible. One talking point that I think is a little interesting, I don't know that how exactly I feel about this. I was talking with Mel Got Served about this episode, and Mel thinks that I know that it's weird having Anissa paired up with Jordan for sure, and seems confusing at least, but I think Mel finds it a little bit icky, even being that Anissa is so close with Tori, and Tori and Jordan haven't really resolved their feelings, haven't had any talks, it seems, in the last year and a half. So for Anissa then to be willing to come into the house with Jordan, should that have been off the table? Should she have pushed back on that a little bit? Or no problem. It's not weird having your best friend and your ex-fiance that you have a strained relationship with in the house.
I'm almost going to take it a step further with my tinfoil hat to say that I'm going to walk back everything that I just said 5 minutes ago and say they knew that Anissa was coming back in, or that Tori knew that Anissa was coming back in with Jordan, because they're back in quarantine. We're a couple of days ago, you know, and at this point, I mean, we're only a couple of days apart in filming cycle. This is, you know, probably 3-4 days at most apart from when, like, Bananas and Nani got here, probably less. And I'm going to say that they were in their hotel rooms. Tori and Anissa were texting, and Anissa told Tori, so I'm coming back, but I have Jordan with me this time. Is that okay? Is that okay? That's not a question she can ask. It's just like to let her know. That's just what I'm going to throw out there.
I think it's kind of, for me, comes down to if Anissa could say no, and it was the difference between Jordan getting on the show or not. And it's like, well, I'm going to say no and take this hit so that my friend doesn't have to get, like, bombarded by her ex if she truly doesn't know he's there, then sure. But, like, they're just pulling any random person off the street to get Jordan in that house. Like, some random production member is going to be like, oh, Australian reality TV star, like Meg, here she is, and she's with Jordan. They've been friends for 30 years. They've known each other, and they're in the house now.
Well, I don't disagree, and that's unfortunate, but point is, the two of them are back, and I guess let's get right into it, because there's a lot going on before we get to the challenge itself. But, like, the two main segments, we have Tori and Anissa talk, and then we have some stuff with Fessel, so we'll get to both of those. Start with Tori and Anissa's talk, because this is kind of a continuation off of what we were talking about last week, what Tori was talking about last week, opening up about her struggles with mental health and dealing with everything in the aftermath of this relationship ending, which, again, she's pointed out a couple times now that Jordan is the one who ended it, and we're getting more insight into how this all played out, where Jordan ended it. They were, you know, they were going through some troubles, and Tori wanted to fix things, and you know, maybe Jordan was less so interested in you know, progressing forward with what they were going with, and again, Tori was just having a very hard time dealing with all of it. She sought out help from a therapist, from professionals, was diagnosed with depression. And she is here, you know, all these months later, kind of bouncing back, feeling like she is in a much better place. And it's just, this is this segment here for Tori. And even we'll get to it later with when they're, you know, at the night out and Tori and Jordan are talking. Even for two people that maybe aren't the biggest fan favorites, Jordan, not the, you know, by far not a fan favorite, at least here on this podcast. And Tori, who there's a lot of mixed opinions about, especially I know you haven't been the biggest fan over the years. I've always been like in on her enough, but the last season, you know, there's been a lot of times where it's hard to be like the biggest Tori fan. But this is like fully pulling me back in just as a human being. The moments that she's like opening up about all this stuff and just being real, like this moments like this that make me remember why I love the challenge so much and why I enjoy this show and this format, more than the other reality shows, because these through lines that we get with these people and seeing them grow as people and evolve and go through life. It's like, you know, I mean, I don't know, stupid example, but like we watched the Jersey Shore cast grow up for all those years and now we're watching them on Family Vacation. Some of us are watching them on Family Vacation. And I love to see, you know, them go throughout their whole lives and like how things change. And like, that's the point of like MTV reality. They do a really good job with that over multiple shows. And they do a great job with it on The Challenge. So seeing this side of Tori where she is, you know, getting the help that she needs and telling us all about it and letting us in as somebody who is a television personality and showing, you know, I'm going through this and here I'm like, and luckily they aired this confessional. Like I implore any of you, if you're watching this, reach out, ask for help. It's there. You can, you know, you can get better. I'm getting better. And again, just loved all of this.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Like you said, I have not been the biggest Tori fan, but the last couple of weeks, I'm like, is Tori likable again? I am always going to have issues with her, you know, what I would call essentially, co-signing some of like Jordan's behavior and having, you know, supporting through that, never really at least publicly questioning any of that. So that's going to be an issue. But in terms of these episodes, I feel like Tori has come off intensely likable. I really think that she's doing a great job of talking about mental health. She talked about on the podcast how she even went to someone like the psychiatrist on staff at the challenge and talked to them about how should she talk about this in confessional because she wanted to be responsible and make sure she said the right thing and not be triggering to people in the audience, but also shed a light on what she's gone through and what other people are going through and like do good with her situation. And I feel like she did a really good job of that. And I'm really happy that she took the time to go through that and has felt brave enough to talk about that, because I do think that there will be people that will be helped in the audience by watching this. And I also think that it's given us a really good insight to Tori as a character. I've had a few times where I've questioned the authenticity of Tori on the show, and I feel like maybe we're breaking through and we're getting the real Tori again that I feel like we used to get.
The reason that I've connected with her over the seasons has been because I find her to be somebody who can just be such a good time, such a fun person. Like, she's literally like in an alliance of people in general that like people don't like because they have so much fun together. And I don't, you know what goes on when they all hang out. All I know is that people are annoyed by them watching them on the show. And it's been a couple seasons back to back that they've all been in there and they've all been doing pretty well together. So I get the annoyance towards them. But I don't know, just me as a person, I feel like Tori is somebody that I see a lot of good qualities in, I guess, or I just find her entertaining. I don't know exactly what I'm, you know, getting at, but obviously I don't dislike her. I never really have. There's just been times again where she's been a bit much, and this season I think we're getting a very you know, we're seeing all of her best sides, all of her best qualities, and you know, it's with good reason. It's with, you know, a good message, and I think it's, you know, we're off to a really good start here with all that. And the fact that, you know, I honestly, let's just put this all together later on. Jordan and Tori, when they have their conversation, when they're having, you know, this you know, big opening up, and it's crazy this is happening on camera. I mean, this is what their lives are. They do this show, they live their lives on camera, and how would it not be? So it's not like you could expect, or you would, you know, it was very quick though. It's Jordan just got here the next day, they're here, you know, getting right into it. But the way that Tori like breaks down to him talking about, you know, this is what, you know, like I just need more closure. I need, I just need you to know that I'm sorry. I need you to know that I regret a lot of how I handled things. And just, I mean, they're both being mature about it. They're both being adults about it. It's really, I think, nice to see that they still have that love and whatever for each other, because a lot of couples, when they break up, don't necessarily have that. And that's fine too. I mean, nobody, there's no rule book of how you have to handle that kind of thing. But it is nice to see when two human beings who went through a tough thing can come out on the other side and still have love and respect for each other. And, you know, Jordan makes a joke that he just doesn't want her to win the challenge and everything else. Like, he hopes, you know, the best for her. So the fact that he was just sitting there and listening to her and letting her talk and letting her cry, and, you know, just hearing everything they had to say about each other, it was just, I liked it all.
So one of my complaints on All-Stars 3 was I didn't want Jordan there in any way, shape, or form, and I didn't want him to get screen time. But when he's there and we're giving him screen time, for us to hear nothing about him and Tori, get a fake storyline about him and Naya that took, like, 2 seconds, and it didn't really explain anything, and, like, it felt concocted and didn't really tell the true story of, like, that it seemed they had done a lot more healing off camera and potentially hooking up off camera. So to get a much more genuine moment on the show between Jordan and Tori, if he's going to be here, if we're going to talk about it, like, I'm glad that we got that. This is a story that we've seen unfold over many seasons of television, that we've seen both of them, like, develop separately and together. So I'm glad that we got the actual, like, if this is all we see, it feels like enough of a closure comparatively to other storylines, and it feels more real than most that we've seen in the past.
It does, and that's what I think is making so many people look at this and be like, oh wow, like, Tori, I don't dislike you right now. If anything, maybe the opposite for some people. So at least that's for me. My experience is right now I'm watching it and I'm enjoying her. I'm, I guess, rooting for her. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know where to root on this season. So many teams have, like, half a likable side and the other half. Like, Tori and Devin, as far as, like, competitors, we were talking about how they're, you know, not, like, at the top of the game that you could possibly ask for, but, like, they're perfectly strong and capable players. That's kind of how I feel about both of them as television characters as well. It's just, like, I'm not, like, stanning, but, like, I'm not rooting for them in a way, I guess. I don't know.
When people get in trouble and you put them in, like, a probationary period of, like, oh, am I going to stay mad at you? I'm putting it in, like, a positive probationary. Like,
that's fine.
I'm not quite sure if I am fully in on the Tori train yet. I think that's going to take a while to get there. But I'm glad to see that she's done a ton of work off the show, and I'm glad to see that she's using her platform in such a positive way. So I do really appreciate what we're getting out of Tori this season.
Yes, and a quick hit here on Anissa being the person that's kind of in the middle. Any thoughts on how she went about anything here in this episode? I mean, it didn't seem like she was, like, you know, she kind of gave them their space and she was there for Tori, but it is going to be interesting to track the three of them and how, you know, I did like in the challenge to see Tori pointing out how Jordan was, you know, Jordan is a guy who, you know, powers through these dailies, but, you know, he knows with a partner like Anissa that, you know, is not going to be able to keep up with his speed, that he's slowing down for her. So I do feel like we're going to have a lot of attention on them as a trio.
So what I found interesting, and I think this was on the podcast, not on the episode, was Anissa even said that when all this went down and since, she never even really asked Tori what happened. She just was there to support her. And so she didn't even know the whole story. She's never asked Tori. She's never asked Jordan. She's just there to make sure that they're both good. And it was kind of surprising, being that, like, I know a lot of these friendships on the show live on the show and don't really extend into real life. I feel like Tori and Anissa generally do extend theirs outside of the show. It seems like they are closer than just, like, a friendship best friend. So I was surprised to see that they haven't really talked about this in depth. But I think as far as what we've seen on the show, it's handled fine. As long as Tori's not feeling uncomfortable with it, then it's fine in my book.
Same. All right. So that's that. Maybe more about those three if they come up throughout the episode here. But let's also talk about the festival of it all, where, I mean, the I think it's like the subplot line here is just him talking about how he wants to be called Fessel, his real name, this season, rather than Fessy, because he wants to just kind of bring awareness to how to correctly say his name. It's not a, you know, name that a lot of people can just look at the six letters in it and read it correctly. So he wants to make sure people know how to say it. But the, you know, question that Casey brings up is, well, your nickname is Messy Fessy. That's, you know, what people called you for a while. Is that gone just because can you be Messy Fessel? And he's, you know, really, it doesn't have much of a leg to stand on when it comes to that, that the Messi hasn't gone anywhere, even if, we're going to just, you know, go with, Fessel this season.
Yeah. To start on the first half of that, I like, he does talk about, like the nickname Fessy does not bother him. He's gone by it, never bothered him, at all. But this season he's choosing to go by Fessel because it means a lot to him. It's a Arabic name. It can shed light on his culture as well. And so he wants to start doing that on the show. And so by going by Fessel, I think that's a first step for him in talking about that a lot more. Not that he hasn't in the past, because I think he's done well. But I like, good for him, good for the move. I'm sure that people and we occasionally will call him Fessy, but Fessel, moving forward on the show, don't think he's a different person, though. Like you said, Messy Fessel is still here. It's nothing's changing, because apparently there are four girls on the hit list this season so far.
That are
at least being flirted with.
And, you know, I don't know what my take has been over the past couple of seasons, but my feeling in this moment is that I can't blame any of them. I mean, the man is a moron. We know that, in, you know, in general, as far as how he handles his relationships and even sometimes how he plays this game and whatnot. I mean, again, horrible person, but great sound clip as far as JC's Fessel is a moron clip goes. But, yeah, Michelle, Laurel, Annalise, Colleen, I can't blame them for getting into bed with Fessel. He's a very attractive man, and if he was pursuing me, I would probably, you know, see, you know, what he's thinking about there. So they, you know, so that's what's going on. I don't know if any of them are like actually like getting close. I don't know if any hookups are like going on. I have no idea. All we see is the montage of all that. Fessel and Colleen are spending a lot of time in the hot tub, so that's something that keeps getting highlighted. The hot tub has gotten brought up, unless it's just I'm thinking too much about it because I have rewatched some of the episodes, but I feel like I've heard about the hot tub like 30 times by now. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a thing. I mean, the story that they want to tell us is Fessel and Colleen on this show. I know that Michelle and Fessel, so last season or the off season, I guess, but seems like that might still be an on again, off again type thing. And then Laurel is apparently, like, Michelle was in Fessel's bed one night. She gets out in the morning. Laurel jumps in there in the next morning. Neither of the two knew that this was even happening. And then I think Annalise is probably the least involved of the four as far as the information that we've gotten. But Fessel's playing a game, and he said that his name means the decision maker, and yet one of the most indecisive people that I can remember seeing on TV.
Yeah. More on him to come, because obviously we are going to have him be the winner of the Daily Challenge. But before we get to the challenge itself, some quick hits, some teases about what's happening throughout, you know, the rest of the episode. We have Olivia and Horatio talking about they're going to have a target on their back after a strong win. Yes, correct.
See, except though, I think they're talking about the wrong, like, challenge. They're like, wow, that elimination, we really showed our stuff. And like, it spoke volumes about how strong we are as competitors. It's like, no, it was the Daily. The elimination was a wash. Nothing happened there. But yes, the Daily was very impressive.
Yeah. Both. I mean, their you know, threat level is all over the map right now. So
I almost wonder if it was cut after this elimination, because
that's possible.
You know, I think that all around, like, by default, a more impressive win, but we'll talk about it when we get there.
Yes. We have, and of course, you know, what's going to be a main storyline here is we're going to lose Johnny and Raven throughout this episode. A lot of Nerisse and Johnny and Raven and this triangle, which is a lot less cohesive and a lot less of what the Anissa, Tori, and Jordan is of that. That's a group that is working on healing. And this is a group that is just all over the place. We know that Nerisse and Johnny have been a thing, and Raven has been feeling distant from her partner, and that's not going to get any better throughout this episode.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, we obviously don't have the context of Johnny and Raven outside of the show, so it's hard to know exactly where I come down on this, where Raven presented it like, oh, we weren't really anything, but then he kind of led me to believe that we're going to be a thing in the house. So I don't really know how I feel about this ultimately, because what we're getting on screen, everyone seems to be being very mature and handling it very well and having open, frank conversations, including Johnny, Nerissa, and Raven. All three of them, I think, in this conversation were pretty good. But Raven, very obviously in the confessionals, isn't fully resolved on this matter.
You say Johnny very good in that scene, but he did. It was a little awkward the way that he told Raven right in front of Nerissa, "You'll always come first." if I was the one that was coupled up with Johnny, I would be like, "Okay." But that's their problems to deal with. Do we have any idea if they're still a thing at all?
I have no idea. My question more so is like, were they a thing in the hotel after being eliminated?
Oh, Raven and...
Oh, yes. Johnny and Nerissa, please. I was going to say where he's like, Nerissa, wait for me. Like, do you think Nerissa waited for Johnny?
He didn't quite say, wait for me. He said, I'll wait for you.
I'll wait for you. I don't think he waited past one or two days.
Yeah. Let's link up when you get back. Okay. Well, you guys let me know how that went. If you have any information, let me know.
In terms of I'll stay single, like, sure, I believe that.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're fully staying off the market.
Mm. So more on that. Let's talk about the daily challenge here. It's called Build Me Up. It's a lot of cardio here, as Olivia is going to complain about. Two different heats with everybody in the competition split in half. You have six barrels. You have to run pretty much from start to finish or whatever you got to do there with the barrels. Climb up a couple different times. Set off some, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, smoke, whatever. and then run to the finish line. Fastest person to do so is going to be the winner. And this is a pretty standard challenge, nothing too exciting here. But you get to see a little bit of what people are made out of, and specifically the winning team here, Fessel and Mariah, I was very impressed with. I think hard not to be. Mariah especially, because I didn't really know much about Mariah coming in, and it's like a challenge like this that some of these rookies, you're like, well, let's see what they're made out of. Mariah, the rookies that were all, you know, beating Bananas and Nani and all the rest of them, Olivia, Horatio, Johnny, Raven, they were all performing very well. And it's like, yeah, this would be, you know, pretty cool if this, say, was a challenge without so many vets in, to see, you know, the success of all these rookies. But, you know, obviously, again, we're going to lose Johnny and Raven here, and I feel like I don't know much about them besides that, you know, they had this drama between each other. I don't expect that we'll ever see Raven again. I would say it's kind of unlikely we'll see Johnny again because of how little they're keeping the rookies in rotations going forward. It's not impossible that we see either of them again, but it's crazy. Like, this is the end of their story, and they look like a strong team out there along with everybody else I just mentioned.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that we should 100% see Johnny again. It should not be a question. I feel like interesting personality, very competitive. They've had him on the radar for a while. He actually was almost on last season, and they told him at the last minute he was not going to be coming. So it's not like they haven't wanted Johnny. It's not like he didn't perform well way back in the day. A third boot, but interesting run. Like, you're still coming back, no question. But it's like we've locked in. We've already filled up like 20 of the 24 spots on the cast, like more than that. But, and then like, all right, there's gonna be four randoms, but guaranteed the same 20 people are coming back. And mm-hmm. I think that's a big weakness that we have in the modern day challenge. Not that like, as annoying as it is that it's rookies versus vets all the time, it's even more annoying that we just leave all of those rookies completely off the table moving forward.
Michelle was the only one here, like, from last season. It's insane.
Johnny better get on so many after shows, hook up with someone, and just stay relevant.
Oh, shoot. There's no after show this season. I just realized
that. That is true. That is true.
But, I mean, there's, like, who doesn't have a podcast, so, you know.
Social media, the podcast, etc. He's been on the podcast already. So I feel like that is a good sign. I don't know. I'm still not, like, out on Johnny coming back, but it's such a weakness in the modern day challenge that they're leaving them just like completely wasting so much talent just by recycling new cast members over and over.
I mean, it truly just feels like, you know, at this point, and like, not, it's not even like you can guarantee, you know, they get to the final and you can be like, oh, we're going to see this person back again. I mean, and I know that there's like different reasons why some of them haven't come back. I'm looking at like an Emmy from last season who, you know, you were like, oh, this is a character fully planned, you know, they are going to come back. And then over the course of time, you find reasons that maybe they shouldn't come back. Maybe they don't need to be on TV. So, you know, there's that aspect of things. And then there's also the aspect of things where they just are so interested in getting some new people out there and keeping the new people out there. There's an unlimited pool of people that they can find to keep putting on these shows. And you know, it's just, it's like, it feels like you could put almost money on the fact that we will never see Raven again. So, you know, that's disappointing because I do think there was potential there. I thought, you know, she was fighting pretty hard and compete. I mean, look at her performance up to this point. Like if you did some kind of like challenge stats of like, you know, overall finishing in like the three challenges plus, you know, if you could find a way to measure strength in this one up against Olivia, who was a little bit of a bigger girl than she is, you know, a very solid performance. And I thought that, you know, she was a worthwhile casting choice. But back to Fessel and Mariah. Yes, they're going to win here. And I don't know. Well, what else did you notice during this competition, if anything, challenge?
I feel like this is a challenge that caters towards a very specific skill set. And I think that's fine as long as not all of the challenges cater completely just to like brute strength and running. But overall, I think that if we're going to have one of the challenges test just that, this is perfectly fine. A little boring for TV, but still, I think a good enough challenge. I think for Fessel and Mariah, very impressive. I did have a lot of faith in this team coming in, and I feel like they had been a little bit invisible in the first 2 weeks, but I'm glad to have those worries, you know, hushed down but for now. They did pretty good here, and I was a little worried early on when we were getting things like Banana saying, like, Fessy's so messy, you know, like, well, it'd be really interesting to see what would happen if they won. And I was like, are we really going to take, like, an early shot at Fessy? Like, that feels weird. Mm-hmm. So for Fessel to get a win early in this season and probably strengthen his relationship through this move, strengthen his position in the game through this move, I think good for him.
As far as the daily challenge itself goes, I want to, like, I guess point out that, I mean, this isn't anything new, but I just kind of like noticed it more in this episode because the storylines that are going on, we've already kind of touched on a lot of them. But they really do, I guess, a good job at using the daily challenge, even though it's a boring challenge, to check in with a lot of other teams that have nothing to do with the episode. So Jay and Michelle, you know, just a funny confessional from Jay talking about Michelle loving wine. And we had the Casey and Kenny, which before the challenge, we had Nelson and Norris with a funny moment where, again, Nelson is getting like pissed off about people bringing this up at this point. Like that was funny. That was like like he was just like giddy, so happy. They were about to do a challenge and like they were like, you know, trying to, you know, get the energy going in the confessional, and it's almost like he just didn't even think it was a possibility it was going to get brought up again. So when Norris brought it up there, he lost his mind. Like it just like something switched in his brain that he was like so happy. And then it was like, you just told him Christmas was canceled. And he was like, are you kidding me? Really? So that was really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was solid. I'm looking at the confessional chart. We do still have a couple teams that are like pretty invisible on this season that I wouldn't even expect. Like, I know they're not confessional stars, but it's surprising to see Casey and Kenny have a grand total of 7 confessionals. Amber and Chauncey only having 9 together. So.
They've been gone. I don't know where they are.
I know. I'm a little worried because I do find them pretty likable, and I think that they are a pretty big threat on paper.
Yeah.
So I am hoping that they are just, you know, they make it deep and so they don't need to focus on them now. But mm-hmm. I could use a couple more confessionals out of them.
Yeah. But we're just kind of getting sprinkling of like, you know, some people's backstory. Olivia gets a backstory segment there talking about her sisters back home that are rooting for her. So they use that time well. So it kind of keeps me interested enough while I'm watching, you know, some just very boring running back and forth and jumping on barrels and, you know, whatever. So that's that. Fessel and Mariah get the win. Mariah, you know, gets to talk about how she can't wait for her mom to watch her on TV. So everybody's got somebody back home rooting for them. That is the shocker of the century. I don't know what I'm saying. So somebody who didn't do very well in the challenge is Tommy and Annalise. And this is kind of going to pick up from here, going into a very heavy Tommy and Annalise segment of the episode, where they are going to get much more of a highlight than maybe through two episodes we would have seen coming.
Yeah, I at first thought you meant heavy in terms of, like, emotionally, and I was like, I wasn't crying for them.
It was very sad hearing them talk about how short they are and how, you know, it's really hard for them. Their legs are so little.
I was like, okay, now I understood. Oh, he means, like, it's heavy on them, like there's a lot of them. But at first I was like, I don't know if it was, like, an emotional segment just because, oh, we could carry the barrels as fast as everyone else.
It meant
else.
Both things.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just kind of laughed at it, to be honest, where, you know what? Annalise is having a bit of a difficult time feeling weak for once. So, you know, was she a D1 soccer player? Definitely a college athlete. So, like, that's very impressive. I don't know that it translates the best to the challenge. Definitely taking, like, Horacio's, like, American Ninja Warrior-esque training over a soccer player. But I think it can help. I don't know that Tommy and Annalise, like, really are the build that any of us expected to be, like, absolutely killing these early challenges. So I think, you know, get them to a final. Maybe they can do, like, they can run, I guess. But it's tough to have a lot of faith in them. And I think they're struggling with having faith in themselves.
Yeah, Banana standing at the door watching this was cynical. It was like, you know, a person standing at the door there who has zero worry in the world in, you know, their position in the game, their position, you know, in this round of gameplay, like Vessel's not throwing them in, and, you know, an accomplished player, 7 wins, 100 challenges, and to watch these two new rookies that, you know, games could be in jeopardy, did horrible, like this is the first time that they're going through this experience, they're having a hard time with it, and it just felt like the way he was smiling at them was like, oh, this is so cute, and not in a way of like, oh, this is so cute, in a way of like, look at them squirm, and I was like, you need to walk away. But
see, I feel like I've heard so many reports of how many problems Bananas is causing in this house and really just stirring up drama where there probably already was a little, but really bringing it to the forefront. I think we'll probably talk about these at some point later on, but there's a couple things that had come out like from this episode where like Bananas is stirring up trouble, Devin's stirring up trouble, and they're just not being shown. I don't know why. We can talk about that later, but I think for Bananas, he's seeing Tommy and Annalise. He's like, it's not even worth it. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like, all right, this is cute. Like, I don't know, go post on Instagram, like he says. And yeah. I don't think it's the wittiest like joke that he's ever come up with. Not that Bananas, I really think, is famous for that witty of jokes, but like, they're not worth my time really teasing.
He easily could have, and he probably has, maybe just aren't seeing it. But like, these two have to be the easiest to mess with out of anybody in the house. So I don't know. I feel like there could be some fun bloopers related to some of that. But as we're going to get into here, of course, Fessel and Mariah have to pick out 4 teams to go in. It seems like a relatively easy decision for them. The teams that they're going to pick being Johnny and Raven, Annalise and Tommy, Olivia and Horatio, Kim and Colleen. And, you know, there's some upset feelings there because there's a couple of roommates involved for both Fessel and Mariah there. So I don't want to put my roommate in. Like, who gives a shit? Like, you have to put 4 teams in. You're going to have some roommates going in. And there's really, did you have anything of note during the interrogations? There was nothing here.
During the interrogations, no. I thought like Mariah was kind of playing like devil's advocate almost. Like, I think they knew what they were going to do. It was just like, I like a couple of these people and we need to come up with reasons why we might not want to throw them in, but like, we all know what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
Now, my question is, if we look at the board, and I know that Fessel really talks a lot in this episode about how you don't want to stick your head up too early, you just want to lay low. And he is, like, you know, close with some of the vets, like Casey. But being that Tori describes him as a living, breathing, walking mistake and a reminder, I don't think he has the strongest relationships with a Bananas or a Nani or Laurel even, or, like, many of these people. So is it really worth it for Fessy to be working with this vet alliance? Should he be taking a shot earlier? Should he be looking at a shot mid-game? Because I don't know where he really falls in the, you know, what do you want to call it? Like, you know, the chopping order, whatever it is. I'm blanking. Like, I didn't the pecking order. That is it. I don't know where he falls in that. And I feel like if he's falling towards the bottom, is it worth looking at somewhat of a move? Is there more covert move on the board?
To me, the answer to that is a hard no, because of the format of these seasons, the fact that it has been so vet versus rookie, I think it's way too early for him to deal with something like that. You know, with all of the attention in the house entirely turning on him, because the rookies will sell him out in a second next week to save themselves in a second, to make sure that, you know, Jay and Johnny and Horatio, like, make sure that that alliance stays together. They're not going to give a crap about Fessy taking out, you know, Bananas and Nani, you know, just because. So I think he's got to play the middle. You had said it, you know, a while ago. I don't think you were, you know, disagreeing with yourself just now, but saying that this probably, you know, this daily advanced his placement in the game. I do think, because he, the two of them just, you know, didn't rock the boat with the people who are going to keep winning daily challenges. That's what he said. You know, he's like, I trust Tommy and Annalise, but like, they're not winning anything. And thus they can't do anything for me. They can't keep me safe because they're not winning anything. Kim and Colleen, not winning anything. Johnny and Raven are, but they were the target. So, you know, we were putting them in and hoping to get rid of them. And the goal seemed to be to get them against the team that they were against and take a strong team out, of people who you just don't really have much of a connection with, rather than people who, you know, the vets who maybe, you know, maybe they'll look at Fessy down the road if he's somebody who is going to be at the bottom of the pecking order. But also, is he at the bottom of the pecking order? Like, if I'm looking at Fessy, you know, he's gone down a little bit in our draft kind of priorities as time has gone on. I mean, we've seen him in the final where it's like, okay, could do some of this stuff, but a lot of stuff trips him up. I mean, the eating especially is a part where he has a hard time within the finals. So I don't look at him as somebody who is unbeatable. He hasn't won yet. He hasn't looked like somebody who could have realistically gone all the way and gotten that win yet. So I think, you know, I think this move was fine. I think his position in the game remains fine.
Yeah, so I agree. I think it's the right move. I just thought it was worth talking about because, and worth flagging up, not that I am still like doubting Fessel as a competitor. I drafted him still pretty high because even though there are weaknesses in his game, the reason why I actually don't have him as a first round draft pick in this season is one, because I like Turbo so much, but also two, because not because of those weaknesses in his game as much as like who is he that closely aligned with here. In terms of pecking order, it's not that I think he's weak. I just think that the vets have much better connections with themselves than they do with him. Like, he's good with Casey. He's been flirting with Laurel. But I don't know that many people who are, like, if most of these vets win and, like, one or two more rookie teams are gone, does he start coming in that group of four that gets thrown down every week? I think it's possible. Like, I feel like Amber's probably the lowest on the totem pole, but he is probably next.
There's also, yeah, definitely the fact that Tori, you know, looks at Fessel as a walking mistake. Like, there's certainly that aspect of, you know, if there's no love there, Jordan, like, nobody, none of them are going to want him around. I can certainly see that, you know, pushing me back to the other side of the argument, but still feel like it's like, all right, well, we have to stick together. We have to play this vet game that, you know, is all we know how to play these days in, you know, late 30s challenges. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to like bring it up so that in a couple weeks when all of a sudden he does find himself down in that draw, I can at least point to it. And the question was raised. I don't know. Maybe it'll prove me wrong and he's better insulated than I know right now. But I feel like not a lot of their teams, the vet teams here, are sticking their necks out for Fessy.
We are going to end up, I want to, before we get to the Tommy and Annalise of it all, Colleen's going to give one last pitch later, say to Fessel, saying like, you know, really hope that you're not considering targeting us. And I mean, I don't know if this segment was more for Kim and Colleen because they haven't been featured very much, or for Fessel just to show how he's like navigating with these people that he's making connections with being the rookies. Like, him and Colleen have a thing, and I don't know, it really didn't give me a whole lot. He was like I'm not looking to target you guys, but I don't know, is there anything here?
It gave me personality on Kim, where he's like, should I give you guys the room? Like, what's going on here? Like, I thought that was funny. I like to see that they're playing the game, but I don't really have a lot here. I think more interesting was a little bit of douchey Fessy coming back out, where Fessel's saying that Horacio is boyfriend number two.
And oh my god! Like the guy. Oh my god!
And that's the thing, is like early in the episode, I was like, you don't like Fessy. He's a douchebag. And I don't think Fessy is wholly as problematic as a lot of people on this cast. So I still like him more than I think most people do. But for him to just like be picking random fights with Danny on Twitter, or just like a bunch of the stupid comments out of his mouth, I'm like, I should probably dislike Fessy more. But this was a good reminder of it when Fessel's calling him boyfriend number two.
Fessel has clearly never played the game Fuck, Marry, Kill. Because in that game, I don't know who the third person is, but in that game, between Fessel, Horatio, and other person, he is never the marry. He is very likely the fuck. but Horatio is the marry 10 out of 10 times. Like, this man is the sweetest human being from what we've seen so far. I haven't heard a single person with a bad word to say about him. His conversation with Laurel last week was like the most heartwarming. Like, it made me like him a lot. And just everything that he's said and done, and seeing, have you seen the man? Like, he is, he is the top choice. And when when Horatio's not somebody who is like, you know, out here, you know, extending the branch to all the different women in the house saying like, hey, come talk to me, because he's a little bit quieter and shyer and reserved, you know, Fessy is. So they're all going to him. Again, the FMK of it all, Fessel has no idea how that works.
Yeah, it was such a douchey scene, but I did laugh to me. So it happens.
Yeah. So there's that. Let's talk about the Tommy and Annalise of it all, where we are going to see them being a little snaky snakes playing, which I don't know why this always gets described as like Big Brother gameplay, when, you know, it's like, oh, they're playing the game because they're from Big Brother. They're being Big Brother like contestant. I don't know. But they do what you would expect most people to do in the situation that they are in, where they're going to, I think it seems like everybody is mostly aware that Johnny and Raven are probably going in. Johnny and Raven have a conversation about it themselves, saying we're probably going in. And Tommy and Annalise go to the other two teams and say, hey, let's make a deal. Let's work together. I think both conversations seemed legit just from watching them. The Kim and Colleen one seemed even more legit, which makes sense because that's who they ultimately stuck with. But as far as we were presented, it looked like it made sense as to why they would do this. And like people, the trust that was there, what would you have done differently here?
I don't know if I would have done anything differently. the thing is that, so basically with Tommy and Annalise, as far as like the Big Brother gameplay, I think it isn't invalid. Like, as far as the Challenge USA went, I think that really highlighted where everyone's on their first challenge, but the Love Island cast members kind of lost, didn't really know how to play a strategic game. And the Big Brother players, the Survivor players, really did come in like a lot more aggressively. They knew how to play a strategic game. Big Brother, especially, I almost would say at this point, is a show where you're never playing for a return. So it's like, backstab everyone, do whatever you got to do to win this season. Whereas the Challenge, you definitely want to keep those relationships for moving forward, especially a lot more than any other show. So I understand why people will flag up Big Brother players as a lot more snaky than someone coming from a Love show, let's say. But as far as Tommy and Annalise, I feel like they didn't really have any other move on the board. The problem is, I feel like if Johnny and Raven were in this draw, and like, let's say Kim and Colleen went down automatically and Olivia had drawn the dagger, she would have saved Johnny and Raven over Tommy and Annalise. So I don't think that they really have that much of a leg to stand on and being mad at Tommy and Annalise. It's like, well, we were both each other's second picks. And that's not great to hear, but I think they overpromised probably. It's like, all right, like maybe let's both be each other's backup options. But I think Johnny and Raven were so obviously coming in, you can't exactly pitch that. And I don't feel bad for them, because in 2/3 of these scenarios, they get away with it.
For sure. If they had not had the safe dagger, if the other two teams had won and they saved Tommy and Annalise, then yes, they get away with it perfectly clean. And we move on. But they ended up in another scenario where they are still safe, but, you know, they have to make a decision. And, you know, it's a matter of, do we end up in this situation where we have to make a decision and somebody may be upset with us? Or do we potentially have this situation where we don't go to Olivia and Horatio and just kind of go all in with Kim and Colleen? And then if Olivia and Horatio win and they don't pick us, then we go into elimination. And then we go in against a strong team and Johnny and Raven, and maybe we go home. So, you know, it's either stay or go. So, yeah, I got to understand where they came from there. In the time that you were rewatching the episode, I thought to myself, hey, I wonder if Tommy podcasted about this episode. He did. Luckily, it was nice and short, like 20 minutes or 25 minutes. Listened to that baby 25, whatever minutes ago. We've been on this call for 50 minutes, so it wasn't 25 minutes ago. But he talked about how the he had a conversation with Fessel and Mariah, and Fessel pretty much said, Johnny and Raven are my targets. If you are in there, no. So Tommy was talking to him, saying that he was not sure which team he was going to save. Fessel wanted Kim and Colleen to come back. Fessel wanted it to be the exact elimination matchup that we saw it was. And when Tommy had been discussing that there could be a world where he picks Olivia and Horatio to stay safe, Fessel was like, I don't think that's a good idea. And if you're considering that, then I may have to put you guys, not you guys, he said, I may have to put Kim and Colleen in automatically. And then that way the other two teams, like, he was basically threatening him to say, like, I'll make it so that you two, Tommy and Sis, go in against Kim and Colleen rather than, you know, the other way around, which is not what he wanted to do. But he was saying you need to keep Kim and Colleen safe and put the two strong teams in against each other.
Interesting. Okay. That's good insight. Now, my question is, once Johnny and Raven's names are already saved, once they already draw that safe dagger, did they make the right decision? Should they have saved Kim and Colleen, or... Yes. Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I mean, because at that point, now you're making two teams mad. Now you're making the whole house mad, because if Fessel and Mariah are planning on, you know, these two strong teams going against each other, that's not just their plan. That's also Casey's plan. That's also Nelson's plan. That's probably also Nani's plan, which is Banana's plan, which is Jordan's plan, which is Anissa's plan, which is Tori's plan, which is Devin's plan. So all of that, you know, is riding on those two teams going in against each other. So Tommy and Annalise deciding to do the opposite, pisses off Kim and Colleen and that whole chain of people that I just named.
I think they made the wrong move.
How?
I feel like Kim and Colleen, they're very nice. I think that if they were to win, they would be more likely to save Tommy and Annalise in the end game. But the problem is, Tommy and Annalise are never getting to the end game. If Olivia and Horacio win next week, they can only put four people in. There's no world in which Tommy and Annalise are in those four people. So it's just as good as if Kim and Colleen are here and win. I think Olivia and Horacio are much more likely to be winning challenges. I think they are much more likely to be a target ahead of you and be the ones thrown directly into elimination, where Kim and Colleen could much more easily sneak by and not be thrown in, and you'll be thrown in instead. So I think that ultimately, for me, I think it's probably the wrong move.
I mean, I guess to your credit, Nelson, you know, has a confessional saying that this is going to come back and bite them because of the fact that he, you know, turned on Olivia and Horatio, you know, saying that, you know, going back on that deal or whatever. So you already, I don't know. I just can't, you know, especially with this added context of knowing that this is, you know, exactly what Fessel wanted. And again, which is exactly what probably everybody he was aligned with wanted. I feel like it's a lot more worthwhile to keep the power structure happy than, you know, when you're Tommy and Annalise specifically.
If Johnny and Raven send home Kim and Colleen, which I don't think is a guarantee, but, like, let's say they do, and Johnny likely and Raven and Olivia and Horacio are still in the house next week, do you think anyone is throwing Tommy and Annalise directly into elimination? I don't think so. I think that they're still just as safe until both of those teams are gone.
I don't know. I think it's entirely possible, but...
They're going in the draw no matter what. Like,
there's a lot of love for Horacio. I think, you know, there's plenty of people who are looking to work with him, to keep him safe. Like, I doubt, are we getting a partner switch up at any point? Like, if there was, you know, there's going to be a lot of hope. Probably not. A lot of hope for him to be working with other people. So, I don't know. I see what you're saying, but I guess it's...
I don't think it's like... such a clearly better move by any means. I don't think it's like, wow, Tommy and Annalise cost themselves the game or even, you know, multiple weeks, but I think it is a slightly better move, in my opinion.
All right. This elimination is going to be called Double Decker, which is a play on Hall Brawl. And before we get to it, did we have anything else from before the elimination?
No, I'm good to talk about the elimination.
Okay, so it's Double Decker. It's a Hall Brawl type environment scenario here where you have all four players competing in it, and you have two on the bottom floor, two on the top floor. The bottom floor is going to go at it first, and whoever pushes their opponent into their zone first is going to give their opponent or their teammate on top a head start, but what was like a second head start over the other, and then they do the same thing up top, and whoever wins in that matchup is going to get the point for their team. So what did you think of this twist on Hall Brawl?
I liked it in general. I think that ultimately with that top layer, the bigger person is always going to win no matter what. I don't think that they can gain really any momentum with how short that all is, regardless of if your partner gives you a 1 second head start or not. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the biggest takeaway I had coming away from this was I was massively impressed with Horacio.
Not Olivia?
Also Olivia, but just like the size difference, I just think she's like a lot taller than her. Yeah. And like Raven was slipping out of her shoes, and not to like take away from Olivia's performance, I think that Olivia performed about as I expected, where Horacio passed my expectations for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, he's getting praise from everybody in confessional talking about how good he is and how good everybody's, you know, how impressed everybody is with him and just how agile he is and how built he is for like pretty much every exact competition that, you know, goes into the challenge. So a lot of attention on that man, and for good reason. He's proving himself, and he's, you know, proving his, you know, himself to the audience as well. We're like, damn, this guy's good.
Yeah. Just that first round where he beats Johnny, just like straight out. It's in the third round he beats Johnny, but Johnny trips. Also impressed with Johnny's recovery on that trip. I feel like I trip, I lay on the ground. I do not jump up and push that far. But Johnny did really well.
I wish we had an out of context account.
Yeah, I think though for Horacio to just like completely like, you know, overpower Johnny in that first round was very impressive.
There was a behind the scenes tidbit on the official challenge podcast, which this week did have Devin and Devon. So I guess they will be around sometimes. They presented it from the angle of like that they were there to interview Torian and Issa a little bit more than just have Torian and Issa host, because which makes sense given an episode like this, you know, to grill them a little bit about what was going on. And they talked about how Nani gave Raven pretty much her shoes, I think, from after the second round, because, again, Raven was slipping out of hers.
Oh, that's very interesting. I missed that part, even though I listened. you know, sometimes 2X. But yep. That was interesting. I don't know. Feels weird that she was slipping out of hers in that way, but I don't know if that's a technique thing or shoe thing or whatever the case may be.
Ew, also, and sorry, I'm cutting up, but like Raven, I was scrolling down Raven's Twitter before, because in the Tommy podcast, apparently, you know, in the Tommy podcast, they were talking about how Raven was being messy on Twitter about Tommy and Annalise, which was just basically Raven being like, ew, they're like being so like, you know, snaky. And people were like, yeah, they were playing the game. and then Annalise responded on Instagram being like, girl, don't at me on Twitter. I'm not even on Twitter. Like, and plus, why are you getting mad at us? We weren't the ones to throw you in the first place. So I don't know what you're getting upset about. But also while I was there, I got to see a picture of Raven's, two toes, the big toe and the one next to it where, skin was being peeled off of it because Ooh. Of how, yeah, sorry, of how much she was digging her feet in during that elimination. So she decided to post that for free online, and you know, there's that. So
yeah, I really didn't think about that with her. You know, the sock, sure, but it is on metal grating, and that is bad.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Sometimes it's better to just trip and stay on the ground.
Yeah, I would stay.
So, the elimination, though, was pretty impressive all around. I mean, there was a reason that, you know, we got that Jordan confessional beforehand being like, you know, who's going to win this matchup? Two strong rookie teams going at it. It was a really good elimination. I thought it was a different, you know, again, a twist on Hall Brawl that made it more entertaining than just the usual standard Hall Brawl that I think I've said. I'm getting a little, you know, we could use a little bit of a break from it. It's only exciting when you have it, you know, either so rarely or when it's like a worthwhile competitor. But when you have Amber running over Amber, it's like, what are we doing here? So yeah, that's what's going on in the elimination. And Johnny and Raven are not going to be our winners here. They are going to be on their way out. And Devin makes a comment about how, you know, they look like a strong team, but a team's only as good as their bond, or is only as strong as their bond. And those two did not have that. They did not have the communication. They did not have the love and support for each other that you really need to, you know, continue to be successful in the game, even if they got past tonight. So that's that.
I mean, sure, that helps, but I think ultimately they just ran into an elimination that was a bad setup for them. I just don't think that Olivia is beating I don't think that Raven is beating Olivia in a single round of that, regardless. Like, Olivia's shoes could be falling off. I think Olivia's still winning. So I think that it happens to be the elimination. I did like, actually, that they switched up like when the men and women were on the different tiers of the challenge. I thought that that was good. I don't know if they flipped a coin to figure out who went first on bottom versus top. I think that would have ultimately been the most fair to randomize that, but knowing the challenge, I doubt it was. So, but I did like that they at least attempted in switching up who was in which position.
Right. So that's all that I seem to have here in my notes as far as the elimination goes. Johnny's giving his last words, and I guess it's kind of funny that he forgets about Nerys when they ask him, oh, anybody else you want to say anything to? Because he hadn't mentioned her at that point, and he then makes his confessional about, you know, wait for me, or I'll wait for you in LA, which did he? maybe no chance. And yeah, that's what's going on. And of course, we're going to then get our tease about who is coming out next week, and we are pretty sure it's going to be the last two remaining players that were advertised as being on the cast but are not here yet, Veronica and Darrell.
Yeah, interesting move again, like I said, that they are not showing who it is. That's sad. I feel like that is ultimately being like, it is more exciting when people don't know who it is than when they know it's Darrell and Veronica, and that's sad that we've gotten to that point.
Right. Well, I'm interested to see how they fit into this house, into this game. I mean, I think the main connection, so like, where's Darrell gonna fit in? He'll just slide right in with Johnny and Jordan and play whatever they're doing. Veronica, on the other hand, it's like, I don't know what she does. I mean, she will probably see what Anissa has going on and then stick by her and Tori, because what else is she going to do? Like, she missed the boat on Kayla. So it's what else is there? Like,
she's a strong enough social player where I could see her really picking up people. The problem is the house structure feels so solidified that I don't really know that, like, it's going to do her any good to try to shake that up.
I can just see, like, Veronica walking into a room, seeing Tommy and Annalise, and being like, can I just get on a flight and go home? Like, what do I do with this? I don't know. I would never have pictured Annalise from Big Brother 21 in a challenge house with Veronica, the challenge legend. And it's sometimes you just get pairings that you're like, how did these people get here together? That's one that's sticking out in my mind. Also, I did not mean to get through this entire episode without talking about how Annalise is just like the prettiest woman on earth. she is incredibly gorgeous, and I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, that's my comment.
All right. Mine is that there's a couple things to bring up also, but with Johnny going home this week, I have lost someone from my draft every single week.
I need a visual here.
Basically, including the pre-show, I will send you over the draft. But so far, for anyone that's interested, I have lost Nam when his partner quit. I lost Kayla in the week one elimination. I lost Turbo in the week two elimination. And I lost Johnny in the week three elimination.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, not a great draft for me. Asia also struggling. But with three people gone, you and Sasha, though, have been killing it, not losing anybody so far.
I'm pulling up the visual to see it for myself. Yeah. Ooh.
And I had lost Kenny, but at least I got him back.
I mean, yeah, I was worried about that with my first overall pick, who
yeah, I can relate,
is yeah. So Colin still has his pick that we gave to him, being Tommy. Haley does not, because we gave her Emmy. Sorry, Haley. And yeah, nobody ever offered to do any scorekeeping, which we probably expected. So thank you for remembering to bring this back up at one point or another. So shout out to Sasha and myself.
Yeah, you're doing well. The only other thing, do you have anything else on the radar to talk about?
No, not really.
Okay, so the only thing I did see on Reddit, apparently the post name is MTV has the material to make this a good season. They just don't use it. I would still argue that this was a pretty good episode, but apparently also this episode, Bananas and Devin manipulated Nerys into thinking that Raven was talking about her, and they argued so bad that security got involved.
I did see something about that, or hear something about that, that Devin got in some kind of fight with someone, and it was not in there.
Mm-hmm. So apparently that was the thing. Apparently Colleen also has been flirting with Jay, and she went off on him because he seemed to want Olivia over her. So that was a thing. Apparently Olivia was shouting at once she got thrown into elimination by Tommy and Annalise. She was shouting at the whole house that no one should trust them. They're the fakest people in the game, et cetera, et cetera. And what's my favorite one is that Devin apparently, well, very much dislike. My least favorite part is the first half, but with Devin was screaming at Colleen at the top of his lungs, calling her a liar and demanding an apology letter. So my favorite part is that she wrote one in German, which made him even more pissed off because he couldn't read it.
Why would this not be in the show?
I don't know, but that's so funny. I don't know if it's protecting Devin, but the fact that Colleen then trolls him is so funny to me.
There needs to be like a shit you should have seen or whatever of this season, because that sounds incredible. And we could have used a lot more of that Colleen than the, you know, Colleen that's just like, you know, hanging out with Fessy all day. So
like, we have 90 minutes. There is time to show some of this.
Yeah. All right. Well, the Challenge 38 sounds like an interesting season. Maybe we'll get to see all of it at some point or another. But, I mean, what we have so far here for the Challenge Ride or Dies has been keeping my interest well enough through three episodes. And we still got plenty of ways to go.
Yeah, I am still interested. Ultimately, I feel like, yeah, it still is looking like Vets versus Rookies. I'm hoping that... at least make it quick and painless. Like, let's get down to with the people who are actually going to matter this season and have them go against each other. I wouldn't mind it as much, like we also said, if it meant that any of these rookies had a chance of coming back despite going out early. So that's, I think, the main frustrating part. If it was Vets versus Rookies and the Vets and the rookies still, like, the standouts still came back, then that would be better. But here we are. I am curious to see how it plays out moving in the future now that one of the, I would say, definitive, like, top two strongest rookie teams are out.
Do you have anybody left in your draft team?
Like, oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at it now. One, two, three, four. Four.
I
left?
Have four.
Oh, my gosh. Pretending I can't count. This is one of your so far. I mean, do you you don't have a team, do you?
No, I do not have, like, both halves of a team.
One of your most surprising performances through three episodes. Yeah, but
I know. I was hoping to get Mariah on the backswing, and that didn't happen. So. Yeah, I wanted that full team.
Yeah, that would have been good. I want to play out a scenario real quick before we get out of here. So, like, suppose, you know, we continue with this trajectory that we're kind of on next week. I'm just kind of throw out like a veteran team that wins, and, you know, we, like you said, kind of maybe continue the rookies, you know, being targeted or taken out. I don't know who's winning next week. Jordan and Anissa's due for a win. She always wins the dailies in the beginning of the season, so she'll win next week with Jordan. So who are they putting as their four teams? It's definitely Olivia and Horatio again. It is Tommy and Annalise because they have no connection with them. Who else?
I think it's Kim and Colleen, and unfortunately I think it's Jay and Michelle.
Is it Jay and Michelle? So Anissa and Jordan. Anissa and Michelle have anything? No. The only other team that I'd be looking at is Amber and Chauncey. I don't know, you know, if
I think that's possible too. Which is unfortunate. I think that Amber, we saw like early in the season, really was saying like, I have nothing with these vets. Like, I'm thrown in with the rookies. So I think that her name will be coming up sooner rather than later, which I am hoping is not the case, but feels like an inevitability.
Right. So it's just like, I mean, looking at like, say those four teams, like who's, is the target just now because they are showing themselves to be such a strong team? Like, do we go this route of like, we just need to get Olivia and Horacio out as soon as possible?
I would assume so.
And then they go 3-0 in elimination and take out either Tommy and Annalise or Kim and Colleen. Maybe.
Probably.
Not entertaining a world where Michelle's out, so that's going to have to be what we see. So, all right, that's it for this week. You hate Veronica and Darrell so much that you refuse to watch next week's episode when they're going to be back?
No, I will be watching next week's episode, but I will sadly be not around to podcast about it.
Well, we will miss you, but I do have a guest already planned, so that will be... fun. Couldn't think of a good adjective. I was going to say different, but that didn't sound great. So that'll be fun next week. And I also didn't want to say fun because it'll make you think I'm having so much fun without you here.
Yeah,
so
that's please.
So I'm just tripping and staying on the floor.
Well, I hope it's enough fun that they don't fall asleep on the call.
You never know. I think it's entirely possible that that happens. So, there's your hint of who is joining me next week. And, otherwise not much else going on in my world. I'm on Twitter at Matt Liguori and, yeah, maybe some more Glee podcasting coming up with Amon over on the Choir Room. You were on a episode of the 90 Day Fiancé podcast this week.
I was. That was a ton of fun to get to check in with Puya over on 90 Day Fiancé. The after the 90 days? Happily Ever After. That's what it was.
How do you forget? You were on the podcast.
There are 7 different versions of that show. and I'm like, I don't know. I just watch it and then, you know, I search 90 Day Fiancé, whichever one is the most recent I click on. So that's how I watch that show. But yeah, no, it was definitely a lot of fun. Some undesirable people there, but also some fun dynamics. So definitely check it out.
All right. Well, there's that. Let's plug Scally's Love Island content that is now months old because I'm about to start listening to it as I am about to begin or have kind of began Love Island US. So that's where I will be for the next week or two until I speed on through that one. And yeah, that's really it at the moment. So thank you guys for checking this one out. Of course, we will be back. I will be back next week with a special guest. And Scally will be back in 2 weeks after he's done partying it up with DC in DC with all of our good friends. And yeah, so thank you guys for checking this one out. We'll see you next week and take care.